talk closely so we can pick up the other instruments.
Boy, everything.
Mick Jagger.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the regular meeting of the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, Lahontan Region. My name is Don Jardine from Martinville, and I am the chairman. I want to thank the members of the public for coming to our meeting. We do a better job when you participate in the issues that come before us. At this time, I would like to introduce the other members of the Regional Water Board. Dr. Amy Horn from Truckee. Peter Pumphrey from Bishop. Keith Dias from Rosemont. Eric Sandell from Truckee. Unfortunately, Jack Clark cannot join us today. The executive officer is Patty Ko-Yumjin. This is Ko-Yumjin. Would you please introduce the staff?
Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to introduce some of our staff that have joined us here today for you at Fulton. We have Sue Gennaro here to our right, who is board clerk, and if you would like to speak for the board, she's the person you can give the cards to. Kimberly Niemeyer over here to the right, our chief counsel. Lori Kemper, our assistant AEO. Chuck Curtis is in the audience as well. He's our supervising engineer. Mike Plasiak is also in the audience from our southern region, our supervising geologist. Doug Smith is here with us as well, our other division manager. Scott Ferguson is in the audience as well. Eric Taxer. Richard Booth. Omar Pacheco. Cindy Mitten. And our newest employee, Thomas Brown. And Patricia Copeland is in the audience as well, Patrice. And two guests from the State Board, Gita Kapai and David Boyer. Hopefully I haven't forgotten anyone, but thank you all for attending.
The Regional Board will be considering many items during this meeting. Although we must use our time wisely, we encourage your input on any item so that our decision is based on all available information. If you wish to speak on any agenda item, please fill out an orange card indicating which item you wish to address and how many minutes you need. Although we do not administer an oath in most proceedings before this board, we expect all statements to be made before this board to be truthful, with no attempts to mislead by false statements, deceptive presentation, or failure to include essential information. We also ask that you obey our ground rules, which are: treat everyone with respect. This includes board members, board staff, anyone who testifies, and your fellow citizens. This means no personal attacks and no violent, contemptuous, or disruptive behavior. In the interest of everyone's time, please communicate your ideas clearly and efficiently. So that we can develop an accurate administrative record, we ask that you speak only after you're recognized. At that time, please come to the lectern and speak to the agenda item. If you do not follow these rules or become repetitious, I may ask you to sit down. Any person aggrieved by any action or inaction by the regional board, including but not limited to the issuance, modification, or rejection of a waste charge, of waste discharge requirements, administrative civil liability, or a cease and desist order, may petition the State Water Resources Control Board to review the decision. The State Board must receive the petition within 30 days of the Regional Board's meeting at which the action was taken. Board staff will provide you with copies of the regulation about filing petitions if you request them. They are also available on the State Water Resources Control Board's website. I'll move to item two, the consent agenda. This is and Items noted by ambassadors are expected to be routine and non-controversial. The Water Board will act on these items one at a time without discussion. If any Water Board member, staff member, or interested party requests discussion, this item may be removed from the uncontested calendar to be considered separately. Requests to have an item removed from the uncontested calendar can be made in advance of the meeting by writing to the Water Board or by calling Water Board's executive officer, or the request may be made to the Water Board at the meeting on the Wednesday before the vote on the uncontested calendar. We only have one item on there. Item 3, resolution authorizing the executive officer to sign the record of decision for 25 installation restoration program sites, Air Force Plant 42, Los Angeles County.
I move adoption of the uncontested calendar.
Motion?
Second.
Motion and second. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I'll move to item 4, executive officer's report, and we'll take that, plus it will be continued to the evening meeting also after 7 o'clock.
Good afternoon, Chairman Jardine and board members. I'm Patty Kiyumdun, your executive officer, and I want to update on a few items of interest to the board. A written report is in your agenda of key regional board activities, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have about those items in your packet, or staff here in the audience can help as well. We have some standing items to report, and at our last board meeting, we updated some of that schedule, what our standing items would be. So in your packet is a summary of the City of Barstow's nitrate groundwater pollution enforcement and the status of staff actions on that particular site. Also, you'll find the status of our water quality grant and loans that we're doing across the region and the various local governments, I think, that will benefit from some of those state funds. You'll find both of them in tab 4 of your agenda. Next month, in terms of updates, be prepared. We'll come back to you with an update of all of our activities across the region with Caltrans, and that there are numerous of those. So we'll let you know how those are going, as well as a statewide permit that's adopted for Caltrans and how that affects us. We'll also be proposing a schedule of meetings for the board for the following year and getting prepared for that. Traditionally, at this time, I'd also give you an update on the PG&E Hinkley cleanup in my EO report. And a piece of it is in their written report. However, I like to postpone this presentation till later in the evening as part of the beginning of item 10 on the EIR. This will allow the public to be present to hear the status report on our various activities, and they could ask questions of staff. So with the board's approval, I'd like to postpone that part of the report until then. Also, at the end of my report, I'm going to ask Lori Kemper to come join me up here. And she's going to give the second quarterly enforcement report to the board and update you on our activities there. But I thought I'd take some issues and update you on some things. Namely, I'd like to also welcome our new employee to the Victorville office. Thomas, would you stand up? Thomas has joined our office by way of Oklahoma. He's a welcome addition to our team. And I just got handed a little bit of his background, so I'll relay some of that. Tom has 17 years of experience working as a chemical engineer and environmental engineer, so he brings a whole depth of experience to the regional board. He's worked for large and small engineering companies, done feasibility studies for oil, natural gas, chemical fertilizer, and coal gasification. He's worked on so many projects, including very helpful with our chrome 6 contamination, I think. His background in that will be most appreciated in the region. I know that the staff there are very excited to have him join the team. He has a PhD from UCLA,
and received his bachelor's from San Jose State in chemical engineering, and he has a PE license in both chemical and civil engineering. So please help me welcome him to the regional board. I also want to update the board. I guess with good news comes a little bit of bad news, and then again, good news. But as a result of the budget cuts, all regional boards and all state agencies unfortunately suffered loss where we had to lose all of our students. For our regional board, it was about 10 students, and they did provide a very vital service to us. Data analysis and on-site monitoring and other things, they really were a vital part of our team. But we rallied, as did all the regional boards, to try to see what we can do, and we were allowed to create a number of part-time civil service positions. So out of that bad news comes good news. We were able to hire 8 part-time positions, 5 up in the north and 3 down here. So there wasn't a continuity of our workload, I think, can continue with these stellar staff. And hopefully that gives them a leg up if they ever want to go into this, into government work as a profession, that this will help them in that way. So I was happy to report that when a month and a half ago, I think we were in dire straits. On recent legislation, I also want to give a little bit of update. I sent to the board some information on that, but and a lot of these were passed in the last few hours of session, as sometimes they are, and so there's some number of interesting bills that affect our underground tank program and other areas as well. Two of note I will mention. AB 1492, this was sponsored by the Assembly Budget Committee, and this was part of the budget discussions, then fell apart, and then I guess like a phoenix at the last few hours of session came back. And it was passed by the legislature, and it's now presently on the governor's desk awaiting his consideration to sign or veto. We hope for sign. And what this would do is set a new consumer fee on lumber products and engineered wood products, 1% of gross receipts. So basically every time we go to Home Depot or Lowe's, we'll have to pay a little bit more for our lumber or engineered products. The revenues will cover state agency costs for review of projects or permits necessary to conduct timber operations. The water boards and fishing game in particular have been traditionally underfunded for their activities on timber work, and so this hopefully will have an infusion of funds for agencies, including perhaps ours as well, to help us cover the swath of timber issues that we deal with. It also extends the timber harvest plan from 3 to 5 years, and it places some limitations on public agencies seeking damages caused by wildfires. That was particularly the controversial part of that legislation, about holding harmless companies that caused wildfires. Another measure of particular interest to the board, I believe, is SB 965, by Senator Wright, Rod Wright. It makes it easier for interest parties to contact members of the state and regional boards by allowing ex parte communications with respect to the adoption of and modification of waste discharge requirements, conditional waivers of waste discharge requirements, and general permits. This is also on the governor's desk, and I do know that if the governor signs this measure, that the Office of Chief Counsel will be working with the regional board members to relay how that should be implemented. The bill also requires the water boards to make their meeting agenda notices available in both Spanish and English, and it requires all state agencies, not just ours, to give extra time for testimony at public meetings for people who use an interpreter. So if the governor indeed signs that measure, we certainly will get back to the board on the ex parte piece and how that is to be implemented. Another item I want to update the board on is the state audit. Each year, Joint Legislative Audit Committee considers requests from individuals and legislators of where they would like to see audits. One of them in particular affects us, and that is a request by Senator Doug LaMalfa to conduct an audit of the State Water Board and Regional Board's 401 certification programs. So I just want to alert you that we will be part of an audit. They will pick particular regional boards. It's uncertain if they pick this regional board to audit. But in my talking to staff, we have a very good program here, so I am confident it will go well. It is particularly focused at Caltrans and 401 certifications for Caltrans. That's really the focus of the audit. They'll be visiting various agencies, like I said, even Caltrans, to look at this. It should last over the next couple months. They may come knocking on our door, and I'll let you know if they do come and give us an audit. Another item is state biological objective workshops. These are a number of statewide workshops that are being sponsored to set a statewide policy, and our own Tom Suck is an active leader of that entire process. So, as you know, in our region, we have a lot of permits and other things that we do impose those biological objectives. So this would have a statewide policy on that. And there's a number of workshops, two of which occurred last week, and two in Oakland and Reading are around the corner to come up next week. So I just want to let you know that, and let you know that Tom of our staff is very active in that and leading the charge statewide. Leviathan Mine. A trial is scheduled to begin October 9th, and that is coming up pretty soon. And it's scheduled to last about 5 weeks. It's before the L.A. Superior Court, and it will be heard by Judge Wiley. Many of our staff, both present and former, have been spent a considerable time on it, and many of them asked to be witnesses at the hearing. It has to deal with, as you know, a 1983 settlement agreement between ARCO and the regional board and the responsibilities of each of those agencies for paying for that facility. So it's a very important case for our regional and for the state of California. We have a team of committed staff participating, the Attorney General's office. So as the case progresses, I will keep the board informed of its various change that may occur. Last time I was here, I gave you an update on nursery products, and I'll just follow up to say to that's the composting facility down south that we had some issues with accepting waste improperly. Staff has visited that site. They are no longer accepting waste. We are working with the facility, but there's some outstanding reports and financial insurances that we still need for them. So we continue to be diligent on that, but to at least let you know, it's not accepting waste at this time. We have a tour of the Truckee River watershed set for September 18th from 9 to noon that Eric will be joining us along with his lovely wife, Kelly. And we also have some state board staff. The Chief Deputy Director of Jonathan Bishop and Vicki Whitney, the Chief of the Water Quality Division, are going as well. We've had a number of discussions with the state about Caltrans and the Truckee watershed, and so it's a great opportunity to see some of the challenges and the successes there, and I thank Amy for helping to facilitate this for all of us to benefit from that. We hope to see the Tahoe Truckee Sanitation Agency in the Trap Creek Restoration Area. The Cold Stream Canyon Floodplain Restoration Project is on our list. The Truckee Donner PUD substation, and we'll be spending some time in Squaw Valley to better understand the interaction between the groundwater problems there and the surface water issues. So we'll cover a number of areas. On August 13th also, speaking of the Lake Tahoe Summit, the 16th, our chair, Don Jardine, joined me and a number of other political leaders from both Nevada and California in that event. Nevada hosted the event this year. It goes back and forth between the states hosting the Tahoe Summit, and Senator Heller was a sponsor. And the focus was public-private partnerships. A number of political leaders spoke at the event. They spoke on need for more collaboration. There were reports, good reports of that improving. Streamlining of regulatory requirements, and our own Congressman McClintock gave some rather colorful comments regarding the Manhattan Regional Board. The importance of controlling invasive species. The region has done a lot of work in that area. And the new scientific information, the new study by UC Davis that was showing that at least the clarity at Tahoe was stabilized, and that was the good news. Some of our staff, Robert Larson and Dan Sussman, attended, and in your packet is a handout that we gave where we summarize some of the successes or the activities that we've undertaken as part of the regional board and the impact it's had on Lake Tahoe, so that's in your packet. I also had the honor of attending a roundtable discussion after the summit with Governors Brown and Sandoval, as well as a number of the political leaders and managers in the basin, and we further explored a number of ideas of how to improve the Lake Tahoe Basin, better collaboration among agencies, the need for local government funding, how we can all help each other with that, because that's rather critical, and the regional plan update from TRPA and what that means to the basin going forward. I also was lucky enough to be invited to a smaller session with Senator Feinstein, where just a small group of us got to brainstorm. We spent many hours, actually, brainstorming how to bring investment to the basin, how to get funding to help local governments, many other things. It was rather, I think, a very positive discussion, and Senator Feinstein agreed to have future of those discussions where we could really spend some time and roll up our sleeves and think of some things to fix in the basin. So it was a very positive, I think, overall session. Fuel reductions. We've been very, very busy, staff have, and my thanks to Doug Smith and his team, to work with our friends, the U.S. Forest Service, on a regular basis. We meet with them on a regular basis to try to come up with some procedures and templates to going forward, make things better between our organizations. I think these meetings have been very successful, and both parties have been active. Both have come to the table willing to try to work on issues and resolve conflicts. And Nancy and I now have a regular monthly meeting where we actually resolve issues, if there's any issues to resolve. So, but I'm happy to report that the Lake Tahoe Basin has completed their South Shore project, and they're right now, as we speak, out in about 1,000 acres around the Tahoe Basin, thinning the trees in that community to avoid another Angora fire. I think it's very critical work they're doing. Many of them are in urban interfaces. Some of them are just like a half a mile from our regional board office. So it's really amongst the houses in the area where people really would like to see those trees thinned, and I report that's going well. Carnelian Bay is another area that we're going to try to get the jump on for next year, where we are sitting down with our friends at the Forest Service trying to work on their operational plan now in the winter so that when spring comes, they could start working in that area. And that's another 3,000-plus acres that they would be addressing. So that's high on our priority list to get through. We're also trying to work on getting joint CEQA NEPA documents in the future with our federal partners. I think that would expedite the process. It would make things much easier for both organizations and save us both money. So that is something that we're really embarking on vigorously with them. So I guess all in all, I'd have to say, it's I think it's a positive effort, and I think we are making strides with our colleagues to make things better in the basin. So I was happy to let you know that. Also, on TMDL implementation, on August 30th, I attended a meeting with a number of local electeds, Placer County Jennifer Montgomery, El Dorado's Supervisor Norma Santiago, and Lake Tahoe represents the city Angela Swanson, as well as their respective public works. I think we're going to continue this meeting on a regular basis. We sat down and talked about TMDL implementation, what we need to do going forward. We even explored how we can partner in terms of funding, that we can maybe help the local governments and see if we can work as a team to try to get funding for their projects on there. We also talked about our draft permit and some revisions and some USAPA issues. So I guess all in all, I'd like to report also that I think we've got some good progress going forward. Particularly, I'm very excited about the funding piece because it's hard for local governments these days to meet requirements in this shrinking budget. To the extent we could help them and work as a team to get funding, I think we're all better served for that. Well, these are the few issues I wanted to cover for the board. And so if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them. And if not, I'll let my colleague, Lori Kemper, to come join us to give the quarterly report.
Questions from board members? Dr. Horn. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Lori Kemper. I'm the Assistant Executive Officer with the Pond and Water Board, and I'm going to give a brief report on your quarterly violations report, which is on your in your agenda packet, starting on base stamp 4-33. And the quarterly violation report is 13 pages, and it covers the period from April to June 30th of this year. This is going to be quick, and I just wanted to let you know that in the many of the violations that we have categorized as priority one. We are the enforcement team at the Water Board is currently involved in a number of formal enforcement actions. So the first one at the top of the list is Aramol Group Incorporated, and that is a developer involved with a development project called Serenity Lodge, and you may have seen some of that in the press clippings. They have unauthorized construction in a stream zone wetland area. And we've issued notices of violations and cleanup and abatement order to require the developer to restore the stream. The developer is still in violation of a number of these previous orders of the board, and we are planning something, a formal enforcement action before the board, to come before the board at its January meeting. The city of Barstow is the next one on the top list, at the top of the list there, and Patty mentioned the cleanup and abatement order that's in place there. To deal with Well, there's actually a number of existing past orders for the City of Barstow's wastewater treatment plant, cease and desist orders and cleanup orders, and some of that the City of Barstow has complied with. They have improved their wastewater treatment so that they're no longer discharging nitrate in levels that would cause a groundwater pollution, but they still have groundwater pollution they need to address. So there is a draft cleanup and abatement order that is currently out for public comment, and comments are due in a couple of weeks. I am likely going to be extending the comment period for that draft cleanup and abatement order, and the city has actually requested that they depose a number of our staff to help them build their comments back to our cleanup and abatement order. So this is a formal enforcement action that we're doing what's kind of referred to as a paper hearing. Rather than come to the board to have a hearing on the facts, we have put the draft order out for comment, and Patty will be able to make a decision on a final cleanup order for the City of Barstow, or if she wants, she can bring it back to the board for the board's consideration. But we're hoping to be able to present, the prosecution team present the evidence to Patty, and the City of Barstow would present its concerns or comments, and Patty would be able to sign a final order. So that's planned hopefully to be wrapped up before the end of the calendar year, so that the City of Barstow can move forward on its remediation efforts. For this particular cleanup order is for the area of contamination that is affecting people's drinking water wells along the Soap Mine Road area on the north side of the Mojave River. And we're considering it kind of a phase one. There's other areas of contaminated groundwater that we may ask the city to address in the future, but this is really the highest priority area of contamination that needs to be addressed. And then the next discharger listed is the DeVries, Neil and Mary DeVries. They're the owners of the N&M Dairy. And this is another site where we've had a number of violations and a number of enforcement orders. They're under two cleanup and abatement orders and the 13267 order. They're under a cleanup order that requires replacement water because they've impacted their neighbors' drinking water supplies with high nitrate, and they're providing replacement water. They're also under cleanup and abatement order to remove excess manure, and they are currently in violation of that order. They are also under a 13267 order to produce a salt nutrient management plan, which they did produce, and we have a cleanup order that requires they implement elements of that plan, including improvements in their stormwater runoff and drainage design and lining their ponds and things like that. They're in violation of that order. So this is another one that the enforcement team is working on a formal enforcement actions, and it's also scheduled for your January board meeting. And that is essentially the high priority violations that you'll see listed under number one. There are a couple other ones that we are still kind of investigating. One of them that's listed here is for PG&E, for the Desert View Dairy, for the high nitrates at Desert View Dairy. But currently the agricultural treatment units that are, the pumping that PG&E is doing there is actually remediating the nitrates. So that's the violation that's listed here, is that there's still ongoing groundwater contamination below the Desert View Dairy above the drinking water standard for nitrates. That's what that violation is about. I think those are primarily the formal actions coming before you. There's also Susanville Community Service or Sanitary District. We are looking at some minimum mandatory penalties and a compliance project, and that's something that Patty may be able to sign off on or will come to a future board meeting. And then I noticed that during this period between April and June 30th, this is a period of time when the staff is out in the field doing a number of inspections, and a number of the violations have been documented because of inspections. And on page 10 and 11, I just wanted to highlight a couple that were a result of inspections. One of them, they're both like in the middle of the page. One of them was the San Bernardino Associated Governments for the I-15 Nisqually Interchange Project, where staff has been out on inspection a couple of times, found that they failed to implement DMPs on the project to protect stormwater discharges, from prevent them from going to the Mojave, in both cases, the inspection resulted in the discharger taking corrective action and improving the site. And we also held a meeting with them to encourage them to have an ongoing presence and their own inspection team to make sure that they're following the conditions of their permit. And then in the middle of the page, on page 11, is a Caltrans project in South Lake Tahoe on Highway 50. Similar thing, where oftentimes our inspector will find violations, and then as a result of the inspection, corrective action is taken. So those are just a couple examples I wanted to highlight. And then just to let you know, because there's our 3 pages of violations associated with the Oak Tree Inn, which in previous quarterly violation reports, you've seen this facility. And last year, we met with the discharger, and they agreed to install new flow measurement devices because we determined that the violations were associated with faulty equipment, and we weren't sure we were actually getting the correct measurements on a flow. So this quarter, though, was a bit of a surprise because we thought they had improved their monitoring equipment, and so staff is going to have to do some additional investigation to find out if we really are dealing with flow issues or if the equipment is still not accurately measuring the flow. We're not aware of any water quality problems associated with this at this time. The other thing to be aware of is it's a small package treatment plant for this facility, and this is the type of facility that could be covered by the State Board's new proposed general order for small wastewater facilities. But my understanding is that even when the State Board adopts that order, these kinds of facilities that are under separate, right now this is under an order that the regional board issued, that they could stay under the regional board's order for up to 10 years, or we may have to take some action to move them under the state board. So this is something that we'll probably have to spend a few more resources on, just evaluating the situation and trying to understand what is going on there, as well as how we can make sure that we're protecting water quality. So that's all I have. Any questions?
Any questions? Thank you. In that case, I'm going back to item 1 on the agenda, the minutes. Could I have a motion on the minutes?
I move adoption of the minutes from the January, the July meeting.
Mr. Chairman, I would accuse myself. I was not present.
Could I have a second?
I'll second the motion.
Motion and second. Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
I'll move on to item 6 on the agenda. Scoping meeting 2012. I'll move on to item 5. Public hearing, consideration of a settlement agreement and stipulation for entry of order and order in the matter of administrative civil liability against Victor Valley Wastewater Reclamation Authority for 5 unauthorized discharges, Victorville, San Bernardino County. I have an opening statement.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, or good afternoon, rather.
Yes, to read his opening statement.
The Water Board has been presented with a proposed order approving a settlement of claims for administrative civil liability from the Lahontan Regional Water Board Prosecution Team and Victor Valley Wastewater Reclamation Authority, referred to collectively as the parties. The proposed order includes payment of funds to the State Water Resources Control Board's cleanup and abatement account, along with the funding of a supplemental environmental project, or SEDP. This is not a public hearing on the alleged violations. The Water Board will either accept or reject the proposed settlement based on the information contained in the agenda item and any oral comments received by at the meeting. Written comments on this matter were to be submitted by September 5th, 2012. Additionally, the Water Board will not be accepting any evidence on this item. At the conclusion of all presentations, the Water Board will consider the information contained in the written agenda material and any oral comments received and will take one of the following 3 actions. 1, adopt the proposed order, accepting the proposed settlement agreement and stipulation without any changes. 2, adopt the proposed order with amendments to the settlement agreement and stipulation if VVWRA and the prosecution team can agree upon the amendments and the amendments do not substantially alter the nature of the proposed settlement agreement and stipulation. 3, request VBWRA and the prosecution team to return at a later meeting with a revised settlement agreement and stipulation if the Water Board wants substantial changes to the proposed settlement agreement. Or reject the proposed settlement agreement and stipulation and require VBWRA and the prosecution team to return at a later meeting with an adjudicative hearing on the five alleged unauthorized discharges. The order of presentation for this item will be as follows. First, presentation by the Water Board prosecution team staff. Two, presentation by the discharger. Three, presentation by public agencies. Four, presentation by other interested parties. All persons who wish to participate and have not yet submitted an appearance card are requested to do so now. Water Board members and our advisory team, which is our executive officer, staff counsel, and a technical staff, may ask questions at any time. I may impose reasonable time limits and require groups to choose a single spokesperson. We ask each person making a presentation to come to the lectern to speak. Please begin by stating your name, address, and whom you represent. The call for the staff presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board.
Just a second. Can everyone hear?
Is your mic on?
You might have to speak up, Eric.
Is this better?
Yes, sir.
It does project in the back room.
Well, I can barely hear you.
I'll speak up.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Eric Tapser, and I am a water resource control engineer in your Lake Tahoe office. I'm here today to provide an overview of our proposed settlement agreement and stipulated order with the Victor Valley Wastewater Reclamation Authority for their multiple discharges of partially treated sewage and raw sewage into the Mojave River and its tributaries back in 2010. Before I begin, though, I do want to make a couple of corrections. First off, on stamp page 5-11, on the last sentence of that third paragraph, it says the SEP does directly benefit Water Board staff. It should say does not. Something that spell check doesn't catch. And on stamp page 5-56, at the very bottom of that page, that number should be $433,189,190. And that's just due to bad eyesight. Okay, so what I'm going to do is go over, briefly discuss the regulatory requirements that were violated by the discharge of wells. I'll briefly go over how we came up with the proposed liability amount, but I'm going to be spending a majority of my time discussing the settlement agreement and the proposed supplemental environmental project that is a part of that settlement agreement. With respect to the requirements, the first off the bat is the Water Board permit that was issued in 2009 for the Reclamation Authority. That permit prohibits waste discharges into the Mojave River except at very specified points of discharge. The permit also prohibits the bypass or discharge of partially treated sewage or raw sewage into surface waters or onto the land's surface. The statewide general permit for sanitary sewer overflows prohibits discharges of raw sewage into surface waters, and it also prohibits the discharges of raw sewage or sanitary sewer overflows that create a nuisance. And finally, regulatory requirements under Clean Water Act Section 301 and State Water Code Section 13376 specifically prohibit pollutant discharges into surface waters. And these are the discharge events that violated the regulatory requirements. The first two are for discharges of partially treated sewage into the Mojave River. The last three are for discharges of raw sewage into the Mojave River or into its tributaries. These all occurred in 2010, the last half of 2010. And I want to make particular note of the last discharge event. It was a multi-day discharge event of almost 43 million gallons of raw sewage into the Mojave River. However, that discharge event occurred during a rather epic storm event, and the specific considerations of, or the specific instances of that event were taken into consideration when we determined the penalty amount, as were the considerations for all discharge events. So in determining the penalty amount, we first started off with the regulatory maximum. That maximum number is $434,189,190. We then considered the facts and instances of each discharge event and how that related to the statewide enforcement policy and the penalty matrix that's provided in that statewide enforcement policy. Once we ran through that process, we determined that an appropriate penalty amount was more on the order of $900,000. Taking this number, we entered into settlement negotiations with the Reclamation Authority. Based upon those settlement negotiations, we came up with a penalty amount and agreed upon a penalty amount of $700,000. More than half of this amount, $377,000, will be paid to the state cleanup and abatement account as a cash payment. The remaining amount, just over $322,600, will be directed towards a supplemental environmental project. That SEP will be for the development of a salt nutrient management plan for the Mojave River groundwater basin area. The proposed SEP amount, the $322,000, will cover the entire cost of developing the salt nutrient management plan. The plan will be developed as a collaborative process with local interested and affected agencies. The plan will also be developed to be consistent with the state's recycled water policy, as contained in State Board Resolution 2009-11. The plan will also be developed by the Mojave Water Agency, and the plan will be integrated, or will be incorporated into the agency's Integrated Regional Water Management Plan. In fact, the Mojave Water Agency has applied for other funding sources to help develop this plan. Specifically, they applied for Prop 84 funds. However, they were denied. That application was denied. So this proposed settlement amount will be the only funding source at this time to develop and implement that plan. This map shows the general planning area for the proposed salt nutrient management plan. On the lower right-hand corner of the map, there's a little area that is outside our region and is regulated by the Colorado Regional Board. So that regional board will also have some input into this plan development. The purpose of the salt nutrient management plan will be to identify and to manage the salts and nutrients within the groundwater basin. To do this, the Mojave Water Agency will be evaluating existing groundwater quality in the area, and they will evaluate the assimilative capacity of the area groundwater with respect to future planned discharges of salt and nutrients. This will then be used to assure attainment of water quality objectives and to protect existing groundwater beneficial uses from future planned developments in the area with respect to salt and nutrient discharges. The plan will be completed by May of 2014. However, that plan can be extended, or that deadline can be extended by an additional 2 years if approved by this regional board and by the Colorado Regional Board. And again, the plan will be provided to both regional boards for their approval and incorporation into their respective basin plans. In coming up with the proposed settlement agreement, we used existing statewide policy to assure that we are doing this in an appropriate manner. We believe that the settlement agreement fulfills the enforcement objectives provided by the statewide enforcement policy, in that it provides a fair, firm, and consistent enforcement mechanism with respect to other similar type discharge events. The amount of the proposed liability is within the range of considerations contained in the state enforcement policy. With respect to the statewide SEP policy, we believe that the proposed salt nutrient management plan is consistent with that policy. Less than half of the monetary assessment is being directed towards the policy, towards the plan development. The Mojave Water Agency, who will be implementing the and developing the plan, they are a completely separate and independent entity from the VVWRA, Victor Valley Wastewater Reclamation Authority. And VVWRA is not under any current or existing regulatory requirement to develop that plan. And we can talk about that more if you want to, which I'm sure you will. The proposed settlement agreement, or the proposed nutrient management plan, we believe provides an appropriate nexus to the discharge events. The discharges of the raw sewage and partially treated sewage occurred within the Mojave River. It is, although we don't have any monitoring data to indicate that the groundwater was adversely impacted, it is presumed that there could have been some potential impact to the underlying groundwater from those discharge events. This plan is designed to protect the groundwater from future planned discharges, and it will be a benefit to the area to protect that groundwater resource. The proposed nutrient management plan will not directly benefit the Water Board, its staff, its members, its functions, and the proposed settlement agreement complies with the SEP policies, project and financial tracking requirements. Those financial tracking requirements are outlined in the stipulated order portion of the settlement agreement. We therefore recommend that the board adopt the proposed settlement and stipulated order for the amount of $700,000, which includes the development of a SEP of a salt nutrient management plan. Thank you.
Moment. Questions from the board? Thank you.
I just wanted to let the board know that we had sent to the parties some questions about, and I think Eric went into it a little, well, said that he could go into it if we were interested. One of the questions that we had asked was we had noted that there was, because VVWRA will be producing recycled water at the Apple Valley subregional plan, that the requirement to participate in the development of a salt nutrient management plan would become part of the requirements of their permit for that plan. And so we asked them to talk about, given that the requirement to participate in the development of the salt nutrient management plan for the Mojave River Valley groundwater basin is impending. How is this requirement not otherwise required? I guess if they want to talk about that, or I understand from what Eric said that just not currently in the permit. So is that your position?
This is Lori Kemper, Assistant Executive Officer for the Water Board. Yeah, that is our position. The Victor Valley Wastewater Reclamation Authority is not under any current requirement to develop a salt nutrient management plan, nor are they currently producing recycled water. And it is true that they have an application into the board for two sub-regional plants where they would scalp some of the wastewater from their current collection system and have tertiary treatment and that they would offer recycled water to people in the future. And Mr. Logan Oles, who's the general manager, can speak to funding and scheduling, but I can tell you that they don't have a construction schedule that I've seen that is current, so that they are trying to get permits in place. This is part of their long-term vision. We think it's a good idea that they produce recycled water in the Victor Valley area, but they are not. That's not guaranteed. It's really speculative to say whether or not that will happen or when it will happen. And I do think it's important that Salt Nutrient Management Plan be developed regardless of what Victor Valley Wastewater Authority does with its wastewater. And primarily that's because of the importation of water into this region and the amount of water use currently in the area. So that, you know, it's something we want to do regardless of whether or not there's a wastewater treatment plant producing recycled water in this area. So we request this, you know, the board's support of that concept. We think it's an important thing to do in this watershed.
Lorianne?
Lori?
I just had a follow-up question. But the mic's not. Oh, there it goes. Would it be fair to say that when permits are given for recycled water that they do include that requirement?
Yes, that would be our plan. That's consistent with other permits in our region where any permit that we bring to the board for recycled water, we do require participation in development of a salt nutrient management plan. It's somewhat of a... because of different watersheds, it's not always, it's not a sole burden on one discharger. So we require that entity that's producing recycled water, be participating and work toward completion of it within the time schedule the State Board has set out, 2014-2016.
So could there be a distinction that here Victor Valley, instead of participating, is actually going to do the entire thing? So...
I don't think that would be a distinction.
Well, I mean, they're funding the entire salt nutrient management plan, so it is actually maybe above and beyond what would be required otherwise?
Yes, that's more likely the case because it's a very large area, as Eric Taxer pointed out on the map, that it's looking at salt nutrient management in a very large region beyond what is influenced by any discharges from the Victor Valley Wastewater Authority for now or in the foreseeable future. It covers a bigger area.
Do you have any further comments or questions from board or staff?
I have a question. You say not currently under any requirement, don't go away, to produce a salt nutrient management plan, but what is the time frame within which they might be required to produce a salt nutrient management plan? Is it might there be, are we talking 2 weeks? Are we talking 6 months? Are we talking
in terms of when the board may see a permit before them to consider adoption? Maybe there's two questions. One is that we have complete application from the discharger from Victor Valley Wastewater Authority, and we have permits drafted. They have not completed the CEQA process. The Victor Valley Wastewater Reclamation Authority has not completed the CEQA process. So we had originally scheduled these permits for the board's consideration actually at its November board meeting in a couple of months. But we've been told by the Wastewater Authority that they have not completed CEQA, and now that timeline is indefinite. And like I said, Mr. Oles could probably maybe give you a better estimation of when they may be willing to proceed, to come before the board to get the permit adopted, because the board can't take action on the permits until the agency has certified CEQA. So that has not happened yet. And then, obviously, then that permit, whenever the board adopted it, would give Victor Valley Wastewater Reclamation Authority at least till 2014 to complete the plan or 2016.
Any further questions? Comments? I will call for a presentation by the discharger.
Good afternoon, members of the board. Can everyone hear me? Is everyone in the back? Good to go?
Talking to the flat part of the microphone.
Talking to the flat part.
Sorry.
Very good.
I don't know if I can get it to do it.
Should I get out my Leatherman tool and tighten this up here?
Yeah. Thank you.
Good idea.
There we go. Bingo. Good afternoon, members of the board. My name is Logan Olds. I'm the general manager for Victor Valley Wastewater Reclamation Authority. Many of you I have worked with for many years. This is not the first time I have appeared before you. I started working with the Lahontan region in May of 2000, and it distresses me to be before you today on this particular issue, but nonetheless, here we are. First, I would like to start with addressing what some of the questions were, and then I'll move into my more formal statements. It should be noted that the first report looking at BBWA producing recycled water from subregional water reclamation facilities was produced and submitted to my board in June of 1992. So we are now more than 20 years later since the inception of this concept, and it has yet to be implemented. At the end of 2007, fiscal year 2007, our utility had roughly $14 million of capital reserves in the bank. Today, we're right around $3 million of capital reserves. To construct the subregional water reclamation plants in total is going to take in excess of $50 million. That's for both facilities. Unless anyone here wants to start opening up their wallets, and quite frankly, I don't think everyone here has enough to come up with $50 million, it's questionable as to when those facilities will be constructed. The direction that I have received from my Board of Commissioners is that I shall make this project shovel-ready. So that means that we will complete the environmental process, we will complete the permitting process through Lahontan, as well as through Mojave Desert Air Quality Management District. I will do everything I possibly can to find some place that has $54 million that wants to loan it to us cheap, and then my board will be given the decision as to whether they wish to pursue this project or not. We have made remarkable progress on this issue in the last 5 years, but it is nowhere near a done deal for a certain project. Okay. First and foremost, I'd really like to thank once again the cooperation of the Lahontan staff. We've worked together for a long time, and they're a great group to try and resolve a difficult issue. So Mr. David Boyer, Lori Kemper, Chuck Curtis, Scott Ferguson, Eric Taxer, I'm not sure, am I forgetting anyone? No? Okay, great group of folks. Okay, it's a tough issue, especially when you walk into a room and say, well, we're going to start off with you owing $434 million, right? I mean, this was not a pretty scenario for any of us. I am pleased, as I think I mentioned this to the board when this incident first occurred sometime in the spring of 2011, that in 9 days we accomplished an enormous amount and that the board has been very supportive. Also, first and foremost, there was the desire by the regional board to ensure that the pipeline did not return to the river. That was one of the options. I won't go through all the different scenarios and hoops we had to jump through, but currently the project is not going to go back into the river. It is going to bypass this, and it's going to cost about $18 million to do so. Okay, moving forward, what I particularly liked in going through this negotiation was that I felt that both of our agencies, both being public agencies, were respective of the public dollar, and understanding that a multi-million dollar fine against an agency our size was really quite unrealistic. And I think it's important to put this in perspective. Our annual operating budget is right around $8 million. So to fine us $1 million is a huge and significant hit, especially when we have about $3 million to go towards all of our needs. VVWA also wishes to state that in each instance of the violation, we not only fixed the problem, but we also improved our infrastructure to ensure against a repeat violation. Okay, that's one thing I take a great deal of pride in. For those of you that were sitting on this board in 2006 when I had to clean up all of the issues at the agency that I now head, are aware of how dilapidated, in some cases, that infrastructure had become and what we've done to correct it. So we're not here just standing before you saying, yeah, we're going to pay a fine and ignore what your requests are. We actually follow through, and we've spent far more money. If I think it was the slide that showed the various results, just in addressing the I Avenue overflows, we've spent over $2 million building a new pipeline, And what really frustrates me about that situation, though, is that the only reason we are going to be paying a fine today is because it took Southern California Edison 18 months to approve moving one of their poles 20 feet. Okay, so both of those events in December of 2010 could have been completely avoided. We would have had the pipeline built by then had it not been for that particular issue. It's also unfortunate that state law requires that 50% or more of the penalties imposed be utilized outside of the watershed impacted by the incidents. So I can understand the need for some of these funds to go to the cleanup and abatement. And I also understand that when this law was put in place, what the reasoning was, the concern by the environmental groups and et cetera. But it still irks me. Those monies, since we have to pay them, should be spent inside our watershed. Now, what bothers me even just the slightest bit more, and you heard Mr. Taxer say it, is that we cannot prove that there was any demonstrable harm to the groundwater or to the water quality during these events. Most of them, actually the one large event that you saw on I Avenue was completely soaked in to the soil. It was in an area where, you know, no one is. We all know that sand is like a large natural filter. The second incident that was on I Avenue was during a massive, massive rain event. Our entire interceptor, there was flooding going on everywhere. So, to be honest, you probably could have drank the water that was overflowing from our sewer lines and had better quality water than most of the world drinks on a daily basis, just because it was diluted so much. And then, of course, when it comes to the Mojave River and the Upper Narrows emergency, again, I thought your staff did a great job of understanding what the issue was there. And when it came time to assess the penalty, it was basically what treatment costs were offset. And I thought that was a very fair and reasonable way to come up with that. Ultimately, VBWRA will continue to pursue the protection of the environment and public health, irrespective of what course of action you choose here today. I would like to make one specific request, and this was an oversight on my behalf. This was first raised when we met in Sacramento, and I've made your staff aware of this issue. And as such, since the agreement is going to have to be modified anyway to correct the typo for did versus, and then the one for $433,000, I would like to make a request, and this has more to do with my industry as a whole, and I feel kind of silly for overlooking this. And I'm just going to read what I would like to be considered as a non-substantive change.
Where would it go?
I would leave that to the discretion of the staff. And actually, if I may approach the dais and hand you a copy. And your staff has this as well. In the wastewater industry, VBWRA has a general obligation to perform due diligence in ensuring the competency of the personnel providing services at public facilities. Collection system certification provides VBWRA with evidence that the certificate holder has demonstrated job-related knowledge, skills, and abilities. It provides a documented level of assurance that employees are competent in safe work practices. Certification provides concrete evidence to board members and citizens that the agency is staffed with people who know what they are doing and is competitive in any comparison of quality of service. The evidence for reduction in the penalties is supported by the fact that VBWRA staff is required to be certified in collection systems maintenance by the California Water Environment Association. This was a positive factor, and I can assure you it absolutely was, in ensuring a prompt and efficient response to protect the health of the public and therefore considered as a factor in reducing the amount of the penalties. The reason I make this late request is that we're not the only agency in California that has these types of issues where we have sewer overflows. I forget which region it is that serves Monterey, but they included some language that was similar to this. And what we would like to do is to help the agencies and help their staff maintain their professional certifications, because this is under attack right now. Being that the economy is tough, employers are saying, well, If the certification's not required, if it has no benefit, why are we paying for it? This is an opportunity in this settlement agreement against us to say, hey, these certified professionals, it's valuable, and there is a benefit when it comes to these types of situations. So I will conclude my remarks with that and answer any questions that you may have. Oh, I conclude my remarks with recommending that you choose option one, Mr. Chair, as you suggested, that you adopt the stipulated order with the non-substantive changes that have been recommended.
Thank you. Questions from board or staff? Dr. Peter.
Is there any response from the prosecution team with respect to the proposed language?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the board. I'm David Boyers, counsel for the prosecution team. The prosecution team does not feel the additional language is necessary, although we don't have an objection. If the board prefers to have that language included, we will stipulate. We think the best place for that language would be at the end of paragraph 11.
Thank you.
Further
paragraph 11 of the settlement agreement?
Right, and let me get the base number for you.
In the recitals?
It's base 5-9 in the recitals. So it's on page 3.
Okay. The other place that I was thinking is maybe on under your exhibit F. I don't know if they want it specifically to be in the settlement agreement, but when you have a discussion of the other factors as justice may require.
Sure. I would suggest it not be in the exhibit because the exhibit is the prosecution team's use of the methodology. And I think what DDWRA is asking is for language on what they believe is a consideration, which is not necessarily shared by the prosecution team, but I think, I don't have it.
DDWRA would concur with page 3, section 11. That's one. Thank you.
Further questions of Victor Valley? There being none, I'll call for a presentation by public agencies.
I guess that's me.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Once again, I appreciate the opportunity to address this board on areas of mutual interest, and that's protecting our groundwater basin. You may recall that I last spoke to this board in January, I believe, where we were beginning to look at the idea of developing a salt nutrient management plan as part of the integrated plan at that point in time.
Could you introduce yourself?
Oh, I'm sorry. Kirby Brill, General Manager of the Mojave Water Agency. Excuse me. So back in January, we talked a little bit about a proposed scope for not only a salt nutrient management plan, but also an integrated regional water management plan to fulfill not only the requirements of the integrated plan, but also the recycled water policy. And so my purpose today is to talk a little bit, or to at least provide the board a little additional context for your decision-making in addition to what your staff presented, which, by the way, was a really good summary. But I want to talk a little bit on kind of where we are and some of the funding challenges we have in developing not only the salt nutrient management plan, but the integrated plan. As your staff mentioned, I think the comment was we were denied. That's not official yet. We are not on the list of recommended projects for funding for the planning grants associated with Proposition 84. That would have made approximately, I believe, about $900,000 available for a total scope of what we feel is probably a little around $1.3 million for the full scope, which includes about $340,000 for estimated cost for the salt nutrient management plan. So I would consider it very unlikely, given the initial recommendations of DWR staff that will be finalized, I believe, later on this month. Find it very unlikely, given their past performances, that we will receive funding. So that puts us in the challenge, financial challenge of, again, not only developing the integrated plan, but also developing the additional salt nutrient management plan as part of that scope. As we talked back in January, it seemed to make sense to do the salt nutrient management plan in conjunction with the integrated plan. About 50 or 60% of the requirements in the salt nutrient management plan overlap with the integrated plan, so it really does seem to make a lot of sense to do it that way. Also, the salt nutrient management plan is a regional watershed-based objective, so as is the integrated plan. So there's a lot of synergy of working on the two plans together. So that's why we came forth with our recommendation. So obviously, the addition of funds that could be made available as a result of your potential action would significantly facilitate us moving forward. The agency still has challenges of funding the remainder of the scope associated with the integrated plan, which we are required to do. But technically, we're not required to do the salt and nutrient management plan. So that kind of leads us into a hypothetical situation, or leads our board into a hypothetical situation of if those funds are absent to be made available for the salt nutrient management plan, it puts our board in a decision of kind of how to best go forward to fulfill our requirements in this fiscally challenging environment. And we're all facing those similar challenges. I can't determine what our board might do in that situation, but you can understand that that would create a much more difficult dialogue than if the funds were made available. And certainly one of the options the board would have available to them is to reduce some of our financial exposure by carving out the salt nutrient management plan. That would not be my recommendation, but obviously that's one of the alternatives that the board would have to consider. If that were the case, I want to kind of speak to a couple of comments that were made earlier on about this potentially, the salt nutrient management plan being potentially part of a permit to VVWRA. I would kind of question, at least from my perspective, the wisdom of doing that. The salt nutrient management plans by design are intended to be a watershed-based evaluation, large scale, involving a lot of data, a lot of groundwater data, and very large perspective. VVWRA covers only a very small percentage of the overall watershed, and so that you would be putting the burden and asking them to perform a study that had impacts and that would require a comprehensive analysis that went significantly beyond their service area. So all things considered, I think our plan of attack that we articulated with the board in January is a good one. And it would be significantly aided by these monies being available to support that project. So as far as the timeline is concerned, our board has not yet acted on approving the scope. We have proposals back from consultants. Our staff has not yet presented those proposals for consideration to the board. We were really looking for two things to occur first. One is this discussion occurring here today, and two is the final determination from DWR and Prop 84. So once we know the definitive outcomes of those two processes, I will make a recommendation to the board to move forward on a scope given the funds that are available at that time. So with that, I would certainly be available to answer any questions that the board may have.
Board members, staff, any questions? Council?
So what would be the result if you did get the funding? Would you return part of that if it's covered, if BBWRA is covering the cost of salt nutrient management plan, or how would that work?
Good question. I hadn't really assumed that probability given past actions by DWR of not changing their mind. And we're one point off. There's no more monies available. We've talked to DWR staff. I'll call that a low probability outcome. If it is a possible outcome, we could essentially not utilize the full $900,000 available from DWR and still utilize the $340,000. I mean, that's one possible outcome. I don't consider that a probable outcome, but I guess that's possible.
Yeah. The other question I had, I didn't understand what you were talking about with the scope of work. The board today has before it a scope of work that BBWRA and it sounded like your agency too were on board with in terms of what would happen, the requirements for preparation of that salt nutrient management plan. Was there a different scope of work that your agency will be putting together?
I guess I can't comment on that, not having studied and reviewed what's in your packet, but
it looks like it's similar to what was presented to the board in January.
Again, I not having reviewed it, I can't comment on that. But I can say that we have and will continue to work very closely with VVWR and all the rest of the stakeholders to move ahead with the development of the salt nutrient management plan as part of the integrated plan process.
Maybe staff can answer. Was there something in the SEP somewhere that talks about Mojave Water Agency's what they're accepting, their role? I thought I saw something that essentially said Mojave Water Agency was on board with.
Oh, yes, you're talking about the budget summary on page 567, stakeholder participation.
And the
yes.
Stuff as outlined in 563.
That looks like our scope. It looks identical to the scope that we have presented to this board and is part of our scope that was submitted to DWR for consideration of the integrated plan and the salt nutrient management plan. As a matter of fact, it looks like it's close to, if not verbatim. It looks like a cut out of our scope.
Okay. Wait, was I remembering something in my head, or was there actually something that talks about Mojave Water Agency understanding its obligations or a kind of saying that there was obligations?
I'm looking at page 5-12 and 11.
BBWA has agreed to pay Mojave Water Agency. Mojave Water Agency will be the body in which administers the SEP, right, through the Salt Nutrient Management Plan, and that any invoices received by Mojave Water Agency, BBWA will pay as part of the Salt Nutrient Management Plan. Because I hear two things in the question.
Oh, I see it. It's actually on 5-12. Section 14.2, representations and agreement regarding the SEP, A, representations of the implementing party. So that you're agreeing to do what is described here. So you're on board with that?
Yes, contingent upon final board approval to adopt the scope. Your proposed action today essentially takes that concern off the table of funding the salt nutrient management plan. But again, I can't commit to a board action that hasn't taken place.
Just to clarify then, we just want to make sure that the scope of work is not going to be less than what's here.
This is our scope. As I skim through it, it's the identical scope. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yes.
So it's cut right out of our scope. So our scope is their scope is our scope. But with the caveat is that I can't commit to undertaking that scope as part of the larger process until the board sees it and commits to it. So we've kind of got a chicken and egg thing going on here, I think.
Further questions, Council? Any board member questions? Comments?
Are you saying then that there is some possibility that if this were to be approved today, it could go to your board not be approved by them and not go forward?
Theoretical, yes. That's again, the board will vote on an entire package of scope with cost that we have I have a board member here that can speak to that, so I'm struggling on speaking on behalf of my board. But we have a full scope. We have proposals that we've received, and we have not yet committed to move ahead on those proposals until the funding arrangements are known. And we have to move ahead with an integrated plan. As pursuant to the requirements of Prop 84, we are in receipt of implementation grant funds that require us to do an updated plan. So we're going to do an updated plan. The big question is, do we consider a salt nutrient management plan as part of that integrated plan? And if funding is available to support most of that, if not all of it, it makes that discussion a lot easier on our board. And maybe at this point in time, I should defer to a board member to speak on behalf of the board.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the board. My name is Kimberly Cox. I'm the Vice President of the Mojave Water Agency Board of Directors and the Chairman of the Court-Appointed Water Master for the Mojave Area Basin Adjudication. And I can speak as a board member who has engaged in a dialogue with my colleagues regarding this subject. We are highly committed to redoing the urban water management plan, as the general manager has alluded to. The question of concern on my part, and as I heard expressed by my colleagues, was the funding for the non-essential portion of the saltwater management plan, or nutrient plan. And so your commitment of funding as part of your settlement with BBWRA would certainly help us as we move forward and award a contract to complete that, including that as part of the scope in that program. And I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Further questions? Further questions from board members?
I guess I have a question of the prosecution team. Maybe if they could explain that section 14.2 that talks about the representation of the implementing party. It says that the implementing party, which is Mojave Water Agency, agrees to submit to the jurisdiction of Lahontan Water Board to enforce the terms of this order. And it essentially says that they're going to be willing to spend the money, you know, as set out in the setback. How do we enforce that? They're not actually signatories to this agreement.
I think, well, first, because Kim asked me to respond, but I know that Piero wants to, Mr. Bellarda wants to speak as well as the council to BBWRA. But I think that we, the water board, may not have the enforcement power against Mojave Water Agency to produce a salt nutrient management plan. And, you know, I think the probability is low that this is not going to proceed. And I think the Mojave Water Agency is committed to completing this effort and is even willing to request that their agency help support it if the dollar amount does not cover the entire scope. So I recognize we're asking you to act on some faith here, but I think ultimately our enforcement authorities have to do with, if we don't get a plan, if Mojave Water Agency decides tomorrow they don't want to have any part of this, then the money goes back to the cleanup and abatement account. That's what happens. I think the risk of that is very low. So that's why I'm urging you to support this agreement.
Good afternoon, members of the board. My name is Piero, P-I-E-R-O, Dallarda, D-A-L-L-A-R-D-A, and I'm a partner of Best Best and Krieger, counsel for BBWRA. Just like to address some of the questions that your attorney has raised here. And I want to point out to the board to section 14.2B of the settlement agreement. And in that section, you see that it provides that by October 15, 2012, the Mojave Water Agency will provide a representation to this board concerning what happens to these funds. I think that gives a month to the Mojave Water Agency to go back to its board, present this, and let you know if this is a problem or not. As Ms. Kemper provided, if the stars are not aligned, if something happens, if for any reason the Mojave Water Agency Board, even though you have heard that, you know, they plan on going forward with this, then we'll have to come back to you. The monies will go back to another sub or perhaps somewhere else, but you can approve it contingent upon this. And in fact, we put this in the settlement agreement contemplating that at some point the Mojave Water Agency would have to deal with this issue.
Questions from board members?
adoption?
No, I think that answered my question. I'm comfortable with that.
I just wanted to suggest Mr. Boyers is also willing to discuss this matter further if the board members have questions.
Sure. Let's hear from Mr. Boyers.
Thank you.
I'd like to hear from Mr. Boyers. Why not?
Why not?
It's here. My flight worth the time, right? I agree that this board's authority is really against PVWRA. And in the event that the project falls through, there is a stipulation that this board can require those monies to be paid over as, you know, penalties, even though some of them may have already been spent to the cleanup and abatement account. We don't expect that to happen. The goal here is to get the project implemented. And so that's our expectation, if that's what's going to happen. But that's the remedy if it doesn't.
I'll move on then. Call for a presentation from other interested persons. There being no other interested persons, ask if any parties have anything further to present. In that case, it is appropriate to close the public hearing and enter into deliberations. Dr. Horn.
Well, I would be in support of adopting the settlement agreement with the changes that have been recommended at the meeting today, because they're not substantially different. And further, I want to say that I am strongly in support of the Mojave Water Agency doing a salt and nutrient management plan. We sorely need that to be done in this part of California. So I think this is a great use of supplemental environmental project money. Thank you.
Peter?
I don't know if that was a motion.
Yeah, it sort of was.
In that event, I would second the motion, and just make the observation that even if the subsequent permitting event takes place, that it's not imaginable to me that the concept of participate in the development of the plan, the requirement for all participants would be that they pony up several hundred thousand dollars as a part of their participation. So I think this is significantly different than any level of participation that would otherwise be contemplated. I think this is a very reasonable approach to this situation.
Keith, any comments?
Yes, I'm inclined to agree with the recommendation to adopt the proposed settlement with the minor changes, but I would like to hear a recommendation eventually from our advisory team.
I think the concerns that we had raised in terms of whether or not this was essentially an impending requirement that would be on BBWRA have been addressed. We do have language that we could suggest if we wanted to say, to explain that more, but I think that we're satisfied that this isn't happening tomorrow, and it may not happen in 5 years. In terms of the funding, I think that we've gotten a lot more clarity, and it sounds like we have commitments that if the funding did come through, that portion that was going to fund the salt and nutrient management plan would not be given back to us in a salt and nutrient management plan, which was a concern that we had. So I think those concerns that we had initially have been answered.
Thank you. Eric, do you have any comments?
I'm in support of all of the positions that have been taken. I'm glad to hear that the advisory team is on board with it. The salt management plan has been badly needed for a long time, and this is a good funding mechanism for it.
And I'm in support also, I think. Do we just call for the question? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? With changes, minor changes, approved. I'll move now to item 6 on the agenda, scoping meeting, 2012 triennial review of the water quality control plan for the Lahontan region.
Does this thing work, Susan?
No.
Thank you.
Perfect. Sounds good. Thank you.